KFAI-FM Minneapolis St. Paul. Online and archived at KFAI.org. The community's true voice.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them, and not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
90.3 FM Minneapolis and 106.7 in St. Paul. This is Health Notes from the Hearts of a Natural Woman.
This program will inspire you, inform you, feed you healthy recipes, engage you politically, and enlighten you spiritually.
Good evening. You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis, and we're streaming online at kfai.org. And this is Health Notes from the Hearts of a Natural Woman, and I'm Kinshasha. This evening, we are talking with Anat Banyel. We're talking about her book, Kids Beyond Limits. Breakthrough results for children with autism, Asperger's, brain damage, ADHD, and undiagnosed developmental delays. Good evening, Anat. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Kinshasha?
Excellent. How did the book Kids Beyond Limits come about?
Well, the actual writing of the book, what motivated me was finding that the information and the knowledge that I have is not really out there. And every time I work with a child, I find myself explaining to parents. I realized I want both to help the parents that work with me and the practitioners I've trained have access to a wider understanding, and also really wanting to have a wider reach and influence how we approach working with children with autism or cerebral palsy or any other kind of conditions that interfere with their ability to develop.
And it's really interesting because when we're talking about any of those challenges, certainly I think that conventional wisdom is that there's lots of limitations.
They do. They actually do. The shift in my work with the Anat Daniel method is that our focus, or my focus, is on the brain, not on the condition itself so much, or the symptoms, even though I'm well aware of the condition and the symptoms are real. However, I know that the solutions lie in the brain, in the ability of the brain itself to find new solutions, alternative ways, work actually better for the child. I don't focus so much on the muscles, if they do what the brain tells them to do, or even the behaviors, because they're neural patterns. And the question is how to reach the brain, communicate with the brain in such a way that it will change itself for the better.
Are there different methods for different children? For example, a child who, the method for reaching the brain for a child who has autism, that would be different from reaching the brain of a child who has ADHD?
No. I think this is a fantastic question, Kinshasa, because that points out to our experience. So when we look at a child that suffers from autism or is on the autism spectrum, and we look at a child that, let's say, had a stroke and their left arm and leg are spastic and paralyzed, and they have a hard time, you know, walking, sitting, using their hand, it looks like two complete different worlds, right? Because one kid is having profound anxieties and behavioral issues and doesn't look in the eye and has problems with eating, and then the other kid is maybe talking fine and so on, but they just can't control their arm and leg, right? And as a result, other movements. But it always goes back to the brain. And if we want the brain to start moving in a more organized way, let's say a paralyzed arm or hand that can come from stroke or brachial plexus injury, there are many different conditions, the cerebral palsy, that can lead to this result. We need to somehow get that brain to get the information that it needs in order to form new connections, alternative pathways that will start managing the movements of the arm, for example, better. The same thing is true for the child with autism, because a child on the spectrum or a kid with ADHD, they have a terrifically difficult time in making sense of their world. So you talk to them and they get agitated, or they don't even answer you. They don't seem to recognize their name sometimes. We need to somehow communicate with their brain to help their brain make sense of the sounds that come out of our mouth and hit their ears, right? Or the emotions that are being expressed and communicated from other people. For me, the challenge and the huge opportunity is finding ways to connect and with a child and communicate with their brain to help that brain get the information it needs to do something different from what it's doing now. And in my book, Kids Beyond Limits, I talk about the 9 essentials, which are 9 ways to help any brain, not just children with special needs, by the way, any brain work better.
That's what we're talking about this evening. We're talking about our brains. We're talking with Anat Daniel about her book, Kids Beyond Limits. It's very fascinating, I think, for most of us to understand that when there's an injury that happens, whether it is a brain injury or something that's happened to our bodies, that our brains can be healed and actually help to change our flexibility and our body's ability to move. And for some reason, when most of us think about, for example, a child who has a stroke, one would think that, of course, I'd have to, if there was going to be any change that would be happening to that side of the body that is no longer moving or is limited, that I would have to just repetitively do movement on that side in order to help put in balance that problem on that side of the body. And so I guess the question is, can we do that same kind of brain work to also help in terms of lack of movement in the body, for example?
Absolutely. And I liked what you said just a second ago about that. So when we see, for instance, an arm that is spastic and is not moving much or as well as before, we tend to focus on the arm and the muscles and do repetitive exercises and stretching and so on. And very often what it really does is that it actually deepens the patterns of limitation, because the brain records, the brain forms its own experience. To give a simple example of that, if a child is born in the United States, they'll speak English. If they're born, and if they, it's home, people speak English. And if they're born in Israel, they'll speak Hebrew. And in France, they'll speak French. And that same child, if you swap them, they will swap the languages. That means the brain learns its experience, not so much from its experience, but the actual experiences it has. So when an arm is paralyzed and we stretch it and it doesn't straighten and it actually makes the muscles usually get more spastic, very quickly the image in the brain, the maps of that arm in the brain, the mapping of that arm become the mapping of the spastic limited patterns. That's one of the things that I warn parents and therapists from. Instead, yes, absolutely, we can help the brain do something different. So I want to say something here. I see the brain, and I'm not alone. I mean, the brain is an information system. It's not a mechanical system. So the muscles and the bones, you know, you pull, you push, it's more familiar to us. But the brain can only work if it has enough of the information it needs. For that to happen, it needs a variety, a lot of, I call the brain an information cookie monster. It just loves information. The nine essentials are ways to actually provide the brain with new information and let the brain use that information to improve. If you don't mind, Kinshasa, I'll just talk about the first essential because it is about movement. My first foundational essential is movement. Movement is everything. As Einstein said, nothing happens until something moves. But when we talk about the child and learning and behavior and organization of action, movement alone is not enough. Automatic movement or passive movement that the child is not attentive to will only drive the existing patterns deeper. It's simply how the brain works. And I won't go into, you know, neuroanatomy right now or neurophysiology. But when you add to the movement that the child is doing or that you're doing for your child, attention. And what I mean by attention is the child's attention to themselves, to their own movement, to what they feel. When you do that, when you combine movement with the child's attention to what they feel, the brain creates new connections. That means the brain receives information with which to work at a staggering rate. Research estimates an average of 1.8 million new connections per second when the brain is in this kind of learning mode. So I have found that if I just take kids, move them in ways that are easy for them, not try to make them do things they can't do, because then the brain shifts into survival mode. But when I do the movements and do it in such a way that they pay attention, you can do it by guiding them verbally, in any number of ways, and I talk about that in the book, the children just like literally wake up. Their eyes get more shiny, they get more alive, they get more vitality, and they start learning really quickly and changing really quickly.
The essential two is slow.
Yes.
Talk about slow.
Let me start on the other side. Fast, we can only do what we already know. So if a child has a difficult time understanding a mathematical concept or solving a problem, or if a child speech is blurred or if they don't understand something, if we interact with a child quickly, they either shut down. If we expect them to move or talk or do things quickly, the brain either gets inhibited, they either shut down, or they revert to existing patterns because the brain, fast, the brain can only do what it already knows. It can't do anything new. When we want to for the brain to form something new, we need to slow down because that again gets the brain's attention and it leaves the time and space for the child to feel what is going on and what is going on with themselves. And when they feel themselves and what's happening, that provides the brain with information it needs and it hasn't had before. And, you know, it's so counterintuitive because I realized one day, I thought, when my daughter was in second grade and they would give the kids, you know, little arithmetic tests, like 100 little addition or subtraction problems, things like that, and they would time it. They'd give them 20 minutes. I was so surprised. And so many children have trouble with math. They don't understand math. They don't understand mathematical concepts. And I thought, why on earth would anybody time the kids? Why not give them time to figure it out, right? I realized that when somebody is really masterful already, doing something really skillful, they can do those things really fast. So whatever we know to do well, we can do slow and we can do fast. So people reverse the order and they say, oh, if I want the kid to be good at something, I better ask them to do it fast. But fast comes later. When the brain has created the condition, I mean the connections it needs, then as you use those connections more and more, it gets grooved in. It's called melanization, but it gets grooved more deeply in to the brain. And that process, physiological process, allows for the electric current to move faster, and we can then do it faster. But if we really try to do something fast that we don't know how to do, we'll either do nothing or we will do something else that we already know.
So with the understanding of that, with everything that we're attempting to learn to do, we need to do that initially slow, and that's what's going to keep the brain expanding and interested?
Absolutely. Let's say a child that is not, doesn't seem to be attentive to others, so kids that, and many children that end up being on the autism spectrum, actually parents can sense that something is somewhat off much earlier. The kid doesn't seem to look at them. They don't seem. The first thing to do is you need to get the kid's attention, right? They seem to be out of it. And one of the things is, I usually use a few of the essentials in combination, but if you just, let's say, put on their clothes, and instead of putting on a shirt, instead of just, you know, lifting their little arm and putting the sleeve through and another and really fast, if you just start moving them really slowly and maybe even say very slow, what am I doing? Am I lifting your arm now? And then kind of start and stop and go really slow. You increase the chances that the kid is going to be paying attention to this by thousands of percentage points. It's not a guarantee. But if you go really fast, you're almost guaranteed to have the kid completely out of touch with what is going on with them and that you're there doing it. I've worked with children with autism on the autism spectrum, especially with the younger ones, you know, 2, 3, 4 years old, but also with the older kids, the 7, 8, that just using those essentials, within sometimes 10, 15 minutes, the child shifts behaviors. A kid that, let's say, didn't talk or their diction is so horrible that you can't even understand what they're saying, all of a sudden the words come out clearer. I have videos. I videotape most of my work. And you can see, you can hear it. I just watched one of those yesterday, so I'm thinking of it. It's hard to explain to people the potency of the brain and the enormous potency of the brain when we provide the child and the brain the conditions it really needs.
The Fine Line will be in full swing when La Lome takes the stage on Friday, April 4th. KFAI brings you the Los Angeles League of Musicians, or La Lome, for a loungy evening of their signature sound, combining cumbia sonidera, Bakersfield twang, Peruvian chicha, and a touch of surf rock. La Lome delivers a nostalgic feeling of 1950s and 60s Los Angeles, updated with a postmodern touch. Tickets for La Lome at the Fine Line can be found at the First Avenue website. Visit first-avenue.com for more details.
We're talking about Kids Beyond Limits. We're talking about the Annette Benyiel method for awakening the brain and transforming the life of your child with special needs. Considered, there's a lot of poor children, for example, that are, they're not kindergarten ready, so they keep them in a deficit position in terms of not being able to learn throughout the rest of their lives, because that's the attitude that adults have. And so I'm just wondering, seeing that we are able to create such magnificent results with children that we know have brain injuries and that we know have various neurological problems, what about kids that are poor, who have not had the kind of stimulation for learning that we know is required for brains to thrive? Could this method be helpful for them?
Hugely. Huge. You know, you just mentioned it, and my heart breaks. You know, I work with kids that are supposed, you know, genetic disorders like Fragile X chromosome disorder and sometimes other really like Down syndrome. And we are able to awaken their intelligence, to drive their intelligence forward. And these kids, they don't all, you know, they, not everybody ends up being an Einstein, including people who think they're brilliant, right? But there is so much room for improvement. And the brain is the most changeable organ in our body. It's built to change. It's built to grow and form and structure itself, actually, throughout life. And with children, it has the greatest potency to do it. And when poor children are raised in conditions where not only they don't get stimulation, they actually get, I think, in certain ways, a lot of stimulation, but maybe negative stimulation, right? Or not enough stimulation. You take such a brain and you just start providing it with the opportunity to get what it needs. When you said that they say the kids are not kindergarten ready, I would say the kindergarten is not kids ready. I would reverse it. Because if the teachers, and the teachers do the best they can, it's very hard for teachers to work when kids are don't seem to be able to learn well or to respond and so on. Even when the teachers have the tools to engage the child and get the child's brain to do its job better, then the child will thrive, and the teacher in the classroom is child ready. It's our job to be ready to help our child. It's not the job of the child to be ready to come to our class. Hmm. I mean, up to a point, of course. I mean, if there's extreme conditions, there are many children in one class. We have to be considerate of other children. And I want to mention here something quickly that I think it's important. I already said earlier in the interview that the brain is an information system. But how does it get its information? Most people think stimulation, right? So if a kid doesn't talk, people brush its teeth with a toothbrush, its tongue, excuse me, brush the tongue with a toothbrush to stimulate the tongue. I've, for years now, I've said, don't do that. That tongue, that brain doesn't need more stimulation. It already doesn't know what to do with the stimulation it has. So most people don't really lack stimulation unless they're isolated in one way or another. But what provides the brain with the information it needs if it's not the stimulation itself? And what I figured out by my understanding is that it is the perception of a difference, or what Dr. Seuss called thing one, thing two. It's not until the brain perceives a difference that the difference and the elements that make the difference exist for that brain. It's just not there. So a colorblind person doesn't see the colors. They don't exist. The colors are there for me, for you, but not for the person who can't see them. So the nine essentials of Kids Beyond Limits, each and every one of them, actually facilitates for the brain to perceive differences in movement, in emotion, in thinking, in interaction, interpersonal interaction. And the moment the child starts perceiving differences, all of them are extremely good learners. All of them. It doesn't mean all of them will be able to do everything, depends on their condition, but all of them, pretty much, except very extreme brain damage, all of them are brilliant learners. The brains are built to be brilliant learners, and we can help that happen, including with poor kids, especially with poor kids, because they usually probably have excellent brains that have just been deprived of the opportunity.
And as we're talking about these changes, are they something that take a long time to happen?
Oh, I love your question. No. The changes begin occurring right away, almost instantaneously. So when I work with a child, anywhere between 30 seconds to 3 minutes, I expect to start observing changes. Now, what do I mean by that? Let's say if a child has a paralyzed hand, if we use that, or a child is the autism spectrum and has never interacted certain ways with other people, I don't expect all of it to be taken care of in 30 seconds or 3 minutes. But I expect to start observing shifts and changes very, very quickly. So if we take the hand example, let's say if the hand is clenched all the time, it's all of a sudden the fingers get a little more open, or the child all of a sudden steps more fully on the side that was is paralyzed, or the diction gets a little clearer. Many children, what happens is the first thing that actually really, really see clearly is they get happier. Once they start learning and changing, they get happier. So if you don't know how to notice very fine differences, you'll just see that your kid is happier. They're more interested. Then, as you continue implementing those essentials in daily life and maybe also take your kid to a practitioner, to an Advanced Method practitioner, you will, over a period of a week, when we have kids come to us to the center for a week, they get two lessons a day. That means 10 times about half an hour. So it's an hour a day total. And sometimes a little longer, so it's a total of 5 hours in 1 week. I know it sounds very little. Many of those kids are already transformed. They begin doing things they never could do before, roll over, start talking, sleep better, eat better. I mean, there are a host of changes that can happen. And when the brain gets the information, when the brain starts perceiving differences better, changes start happening right away. It's almost instantaneous. It's a quantum system. It's not a mechanical system. It's an information. It's immediate. But I don't want parents to expect to take a week and have everything be solved. And some children, if the conditions are very severe or if they have certain diseases like muscular dystrophy, they might never do certain things. But within the range of what they can do, they really improve a lot.
So what about a movement? I was thinking about movement with children, for example, or we'll use the example that you used, a child who has had a stroke and for years haven't been able to use various parts of their body, and the brain only knows, the only thing that the brain maybe remembers is not being able to move. Is there a way of reawakening the brain in terms of those neurotransmitters or whatever so that those pathways move again, even though the brain's and the body's movement is more familiar with not moving than it is moving now?
Yes, and let me just say a few things that qualify it. First of all, usually, it depends on the age of the child, if it happens in utero or you know, shortly after birth, the areas that would have been dedicated or, you know, for mapping, let's say, that arm, are destroyed, it makes it difficult for the brain to spontaneously, because the random movements, a baby when it's born initially doesn't have intentional movement, but it moves all the time. I call those random movements. And some of them are reflexes, but mostly random movements. And those random movements are the initial source of information for the brain from which it carves out the intentional movement. So what happens is when it happens at a very young age, actually the learning never happens, right? And the arm is either spastic or limp, depends on specifically what happened, but usually with stroke it'll become spastic. And the pattern of spasticity is the child's experience. If the child has learned how to use their hand and then there is an accident or something, then there is a destruction of patterns that have already been formed. In either case, we need to create new patterns, new pathways. And you're right that the child's experience of the spasticity, the inability to use themselves that way, we have to get the child to discover their new self, right? To literally create new possibilities for the child. The younger the kid, the easier and the lesser the injury, because also injuries range in their degree of, severity. But if we take the same level of severity, the younger the child, the easier it is to induce changes and the further we can go. So, for instance, there's an injury called brachial plexus injury. It's actually to the nerve of the arm, and the arm gets paralyzed. If it's not completely severed, it normally ends up being pretty spastic, but not very useful. And sometimes it's more serious. It can get to be limp. We worked with a baby that was brought to us with this condition at 8 weeks old. She already had a lot of therapy, traditional therapy, but wasn't moving the arm. I have that video, by the way, on the website if anybody wants to watch. It's Devora. So if they go to YouTube, they can find it. Within 6 minutes, this girl for the first time started moving her left arm. Now, she wasn't moving it. Even her right arm was still not fully in control. She was just 8 weeks old. This child, actually on my website, you can see it on the video on children. By the time she walks into the office and she's a year old, you cannot tell which arm was injured. If we get the child and she's already, let's say, 6 years old or seven, which we have, we can help her gain more, or him gain more and more functioning. But probably there will still be some difference between one side and the other. But there is definitely room for improvement, great improvement.
Kids Beyond Limits is what we're talking about this evening. Your passion about your work is contagious.
I hope so. I want everybody to do this stuff with their kids.
what does passion, what does enthusiasm, how does that affect this work?
Hugely. I think of enthusiasm not as a reaction. Most people, first of all, equate enthusiasm with excitement. It's sort of close, you know, but excitement is more a childish version of enthusiasm. Most people, or a lot of people, think about excitement or enthusiasm as a reaction to something good happening. So we won the lottery, we're so excited, but if we lost, we're disappointed. Or if my child has learned how to speak a certain word, then I'm going to be so enthusiastic about his or her progress. But if they haven't, I'm going to be disappointed and maybe discouraged. Now, these are very human, normal emotions. And I don't fault people for having any feelings or emotions they may have. However, I want people to know that there's a way to apply ourselves that is of a higher grade. It's a higher level. It requires a personal evolution. My book, Kids Beyond Limits, actually guides the parents how to evolve to a higher level of their own functioning, not to become better parents, because they're already very loving parents, especially if they're reading books and trying to do the best for their child. But it's, we are, just like the child, we can learn to apply ourselves in a more sophisticated and evolved ways. And enthusiasm is a very, to me at least, a clear example. I mean enthusiasm like a verb, like an action that you take. It's a choice. So I can go into a situation and find something to be enthusiastic about, to be delighted about, to be, to feel, you know, appreciative of. Interestingly enough, Kinshasa, there is brain research now that shows that somehow we transmit, we communicate without opening our mouths and talking or doing any intentional movements. We communicate, we transmit from one brain to the other our feelings and enthusiasm or discouragement about another person. And the feeling of appreciation and enthusiasm, when it is felt by the child's brain at that moment tends to deepen the patterns and the connections that were just exercised. So, for example, let me tell you how I learned that. Very often when I work with kids, the initial changes are very subtle. So if a parent brings a child that can't walk, let's say, all they want is for their kid to walk, and understandably so. But sometimes it takes, you know, a few weeks, and sometimes it takes a few years before the child can walk. But along the way to walking, there's a huge amount of small changes. I teach the parents I work with to become better and better observers of their child. And we can perceive the smallest of changes, and we train ourselves to genuinely be thrilled about it, be enthusiastic. The child perceives our emotions. Those emotions impact the child's brain, and that new pattern gets grooved into the brain much more powerfully than if we did not get enthusiastic. Now, do not clap, do not yell, do not say good or bad boy, but the enthusiasm, the amplification, what we do is when we get enthusiastic about something that we observe in another human being, and by the way, also in ourselves, but in this case we're talking about children, in another human being, we amplify the change. We amplify the perception, the awareness of that change in the child, and we help the child's brain groove it in. And my experience and observation is that if we trained ourselves in becoming better enthusiasters, do enthusiasm better, with each other, with our children and with each other, we actually would experience a lot more love, and we will be empowering each other a lot more.
We're talking with Anat Banyel this evening on Health Notes. Talk about imagination and dreams.
So here, imagination and dream is another essential is that is sort of both for the children and for the parents. So we know that healthy children have very, very vivid imaginations, right? And Einstein said that the imagination is the preview of upcoming attractions. Imagination is also what I believe to be a unique human capacity. For the brain to imagine, it works on its own higher level. So the brain can work, you know, just like a heart, it can work better or not as well. And the brain, we can drive the brain to be more and more potent, to be able to do what it does in more potent ways.
At the Nexus of Jazz and Hip Hop stands Casa Overall, Wednesday, April 16th. The Dakota brings Grammy-nominated Casa Overall to the stage with his latest release, Animals. A blending of jazz and hip hop into a kaleidoscopic musical universe, Casa Overall weaves a sonic tapestry of artistry that removes characterization, boxes, and boundaries. Tickets for Casa Overall can be found at the Dakota's website. Visit DakotaCooks.com for more details.
Kids Beyond Limits. We're talking about the Annette Benyiel method for awakening the brain and transforming the life of your child with special needs. Where we left off, Annette was talking about the importance of imagination.
And imagination ups the potency of the brain big time. So when I work with kids, as soon as possible, I engage them with imagination as one of the tools to drive changes. For instance, in my book, I write about it, actually, a boy that was also on the spectrum, and he was completely transfixed on one Thomas the Engine, you know, little video, 10-minute kind of, you know, they have those Thomas the Engine stories videos. And in order for him to be calm enough and not have an anxiety attack, the mother actually had to do a little video machine on the table with that going. And the kid recited, actually a fraction of a second before the word came, you know, through the DVD, he, or through the speakers, he said it. He had it completely, it was amazing. All of the 10 minutes, word to word, I figured there's very little imagination going on there. Well, he's just like a machine, right? Repeating it again and again and again and again. And I helped the child, and I described some in the book how I did it. I always use movement with attention because that always sort of opens pathways in the brain anyway. So I always apply that, and then I do, you know, the slow and the variations, all the other essentials. But then I directly started working with imagination, getting him gradually to fantasize, to imagine alternative stories within the story. So instead of it being just what it was again and again, that he would tell me, say, oh, maybe Thomas the Engine wanted to do something different. What do you think that might be? And that application of imagination, that's for example of bringing it in, he was about 5, I think, years old then. After that, he didn't have the I, me, and you. A lot of children on the spectrum, when they want to say I or me, they say you because that's how you talk to them, right? They don't got the pronouns correctly, but it's not the pronouns. It's the sense of I and thou. And after doing that, he got the me and thou or I and thou correctly. It was a huge shift in his identity and his ability to understand himself and his world.
You end the book talking about beyond limitations. Let's talk about beyond limitations. How do we do that? I mean, we've been talking about it this entire hour, but can you bring together everything that we've talked about so that clearly as we're working with our children, as we have said before, we also have to move beyond the limitations. We have to turn around our own programming so that we can see the possibilities of what can happen with our kids, realizing that the brain is so amazing and is so hungry and grows and expands from more and more knowledge. Can you bring everything together for us?
I want to say, first of all, that we all have limitations. Some of them are built in. Human beings cannot fly no matter how hard they will move their arms up and down. I mean, we can build an airplane, but we can't fly our own bodies. A four-month-old cannot rollerblade. Doesn't matter how hard you try, right? So there are limitations that have to do with the age. There are limitations that have to do with the structure of the body, the genetics. There are limitations that have to do with simply the path we've had, you know. So I don't speak Chinese. I have that limitation. I mean, I believe I certainly could learn the language, but until I do, I have that limitation. The reason I say it, because I don't want people to live in a world where they think that if they tried hard enough, anything and everything is possible. But given that, what's possible is way more than we know very often to even imagine. We tend to look at what's possible from the lens of where we are today. That's kind of like what we talked about in just before. So when we look at a child that is unable to walk and seems to not have a clue where their legs are or whatever, it's hard to imagine how that child will ever get to walk. And when we communicate with a child, when we connect with a child and communicate with a child, by my experience, through the nine essentials, which are basically ways to help the brain perceive differences and do its brain job better, which is to put order in the disorder and create new possibilities. Very, very often, I have observed the children change in ways that the parents call magic or miraculous. I personally find that the way the brain works is miraculous. The fact that it is even doing what it's doing with regular kids or normal kids, for me, it's still miraculous. You get a little thing born and it can't do anything voluntarily. And then you come back 2 years later and it bosses you around and says, no, no. And you think, how did that ever happen, right? Mm-hmm. With Kids Beyond Limits, with the Anat Ben-Neil method, we tap into the built-in miraculous capacities of the nervous system to move us from the impossible to the possible and from the possible to the skillful and elegant and sophisticated.
Again, we could go to the Anat Ben-Neil method, A-N-A-T-B-A-N-I-E-L method.com to see some of these amazing videos that Anat has been talking about. And your clear love and enthusiasm for this work is as exciting as the work itself is. And again, the name of that book is Kids Beyond Limits. And the Anat Ben-Neil method, she continually talked about nine essentials. So I just want you to understand what those essential is. The essential number one is movement with attention. Movement is life. Movement helps the brain to grow and form. The brain is organized through movement. In turn, it is the brain that organizes all movement, the movement of our body, our thinking, our feelings, and our emotions. But movement alone is not enough. Automatic movement done without attention only grooves in already existing patterns. When we bring attention to what we feel as we move, the brain immediately starts building billions of new neurological connections that usher in changes, learning, and transformation. Essential two is the learning switch. The brain is either in a learning mode, the learning switch on or not. Healthy young children have their learning switch on and the dial turned on high. Their eyes are bright, their movement is high, and they're full of energy. Repetition, drill, and everyday stresses, as we have habitual patterns of thought, exercise, and emotions, all tend to turn to the learning switch off. The same thing happens when a child has special challenges or a person has suffered a trauma or injury. For the brain to properly do its job, the learning switch needs to be on. Once on at any age, life becomes a wonderful new adventure filled with movement, creativity, and new possibilities. Essential three is subtlety. We have all heard the expression, no pain, no gain, and try harder. However, in order to overcome pain and limitation and thrive, the brain needs to the exact opposite, less force. For the brain to receive new information, it needs to perceive differences. By reducing the force with which we move and think, we increase our sensitivity. With the resulting increased sensitivity, we greatly enhance the brain's ability to perceive the finest of differences. Essential for is variation. Variation is everywhere and is more than just the spice of life. It's a necessity for optimum health. Variation provides your brain with the richness of information it needs to create new possibilities in your movements, feelings, thoughts, and actions. And so as we continue to learn new things, then our brain becomes more alive. Essential five is slow. Fast, we can only do what we already know. That's how the brain works. To learn and master new skills and overcome limitations, the first thing to do is to slow it way down. Essential number six is enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is self-generated. It's a skill that you can develop, choose to do, and become good at. Enthusiasm tells your brain what's important to you. Essential number seven, flexible goals. Keep your eye on the prize is a great way for most people to fall. Freeing yourself from the compulsion to achieve a goal in a certain way at a certain time keeps you open-minded. You're available to recognize opportunities you might never have noticed had you been fixed on a too rigidly set course. Essential number eight, imagination and dreams. And essential number nine, awareness, being aware of what you're doing as you're doing it. And the thing that's really interesting about all of these essentials is that as you follow any one of them at any moment in time, it changes things immediately. And so probably something that I would challenge you to do is it can be something as simple as that you walk in a certain way, you're walking forward. Take two steps to the side. Take two steps backwards. That'll always wake up your mind because your mind goes into a habitual pattern and it'll take you out of that pattern, wake you up, make you present. So the nine essentials are essential one, movement with attention. Wake up to life. Essential two, slow. Luxuriate in the richness of feeling. Essential three, variation. Enjoy abundant possibilities. Essential four, subtlety. Experience the power of gentleness. Essential five, enthusiasm. Turn the small into the great. Essential six, flexibility goals. Make the impossible possible. Essential seven, the learning switch. Bring in the new. Essential eight, imagination and dreams. Create your life. Essential nine, awareness. Thrive with true knowledge.
I'm not afraid to
Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI FM Minneapolis-St. Paul. Online and archived at kfai.org. the community's true voice.
I mean, this is not the kind of music that comes from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
No.
You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3.